It's time to welcome mystery writer Kim Hayes on today's Big Blend Radio Champagne Sunday show. And we are ready to raise a glass to her because
yes.
Her fantastic debut novel, Pesticide, is out. It came out on April 19th, 2022. And I encourage you to get it anywhere you buy your books and go to her website, kimhayesburn.com. That's HAYSBERN.com. So welcome, Kim. How are you?
I'm fine. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can
oh,
you
good.
Hear us?
Yes, perfectly.
Well, that's another excuse for more champagne.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is so exciting to have you on the show because I know you live in Switzerland, but you're in the States right now. Is that to launch your book?
That's exactly right. I'm in New York, Manhattan itself. And just a few days ago, I was at the Mysterious Bookshop, which is downtown in Manhattan, and that was sort of the official party to welcome my book to the world. And I had a wonderful time, and now people can buy the book. So that makes me happy.
Very exciting. So is that what you're raising your glass to today, or what's your champagne toast? We've been toasting dogs, sunshine. Sunshine's a big deal for us. We've been traveling around the Pacific Northwest, and it seems like sun is coming back out, but it may go away tomorrow, so you got to get it while you can. I don't know what it's like in Switzerland, but whenever there's sunshine and dogs and flowers, we're happy.
Well, my sister lives in Olympia, Washington, so I know about living in the Pacific Northwest and not always having sunshine, and that when you do, you have to be very happy and take advantage of it.
That's right.
But yes. I do have a toast, and so many things have gone well for me recently that I could toast and toast for the whole program, but I guess the person that I want to toast the most is a man named Dan Mayer, who is the editorial director of the company that publishes my book, the publisher, I guess, I should say, that is called Seventh Street Books. And in November 2020, a long time ago, I received an email in the evening from Dan Mayer, who was the editorial director, that I had sent my manuscript to at this publisher. And he wrote me back and said, in so many words, I can't wait to publish your book. Please tell me you haven't given it to anyone else. Ooh. And I hadn't, and he was my hero. So that was a wonderful moment. And even though it's a while back now, he's still the person that is responsible for me getting published. So I raise a glass to him.
Awesome. We raise a glass to him, too, because it's really special to find publishers and for that connection and, you know, just for authors getting out there, it's such a difficult road. And then fiction is even harder than nonfiction.
Yeah.
And so I know Nancy's been raving and raving about Pesticide. And I think she's very excited because this is an actual series, right? So she gets to have more coming up.
Yes, in fact, I have written not only is book number two in this series, Polizei Bern, that will star my two detectives, Juliana and Renzo, a woman and a man, but number two I've already signed a contract for. Number three is written, and I'm starting on number four. So I can at least assure you that there will be, well, I think I can safely say at least four in the series for you to look forward to, if not more. So,
wow, this is exciting. I want to give everybody an overview of your story. From what I've been reading, it's set in Switzerland, which is really cool. And I want to talk about the town Bern, if I'm saying it correctly. I got to get
you
this
are.
Right.
You're saying it perfectly.
Oh, it's better than me speaking Zulu in our last segment, I think. Sounds better. But you're talking about pesticide, organic farming. You've got politics. You've got romance, Nancy, a little woo-woo in there. But you've got two detectives too, which I think is also very interesting, a man and a woman. So there's a little, but I love to see a woman in there too, because I think we forget about women in the force. And so this is different for us in the States to read a mystery set in Switzerland. So do you want to give a little overview, a little bit more than what I did? Because, and Nancy, we have to be careful of Nancy. She might tell everybody what's going on.
No, I won't. I promise.
No spillage of the truth.
No spoilers. That's good.
No spoilers.
Mm-mm. So if you wait for me?
I'm watching Nancy. I'm giving her like the eyeball of don't spill. But do tell us a little bit about what inspired Pesticide. And I mean, even the title, I think this is hysterical. We have a Champagne Sunday show with an author who talks about cooking, and then we go to pesticide and organic farming. It's great. But yeah, what inspired Pesticide as a story and to even title it that?
Well, several things. One is that I love mysteries, and I've been reading them since I was, if you want to count Nancy Drew under the age of 10.
Yeah,
but
there we go.
I'm a big mystery fan. And so when it's now or never if I want to try to write a book, a fiction book, it just had to be a mystery. So that was determined. And then I definitely enjoy the process by which a crime is solved. When I read a mystery, I don't even mind. I don't mind if I can't guess. I just want to know how the people figured it out. You know, I don't want a ghost to show up and tell them or anything like that. I really want to see the process. And that's why I like police procedurals. And this is a police procedural. The police are there trying to solve the crime. But why pesticide? Actually, it fits perfectly with someone who writes a cookbook because I am very interested in organic farming. And that started before I was writing some articles for an English language publication in magazine and website in Switzerland on organic farming, long before I ever thought of writing a mystery. And about 17% of the farms in Switzerland or are organic, but they have, as here I assume, you know, most grocery stores carry an organic section, and it's been growing, and more people are interested in buying organic food. And I wanted to understand, of course I want to try the mystery and make it mysterious, but it's always fun when the sort of theme in your book is something you're really interested in, because of course all good books, even mysteries, have to be researched. So I talking to organic farmers and talking to the people who have to decide, who go out and visit farms and actually give them literally the permission from the government and from also people who give seals of approval, you could say, to call themselves organic. You can't just wake up one morning and decide you're going to call your farm organic. It often takes 3 years for your soil to be cleared of the poisons that are in it. And you may know this, one or both of you, but it's a big deal, and it's much more work, particularly because if you do get pests of any kind, fungicide, you can't just, or little bugs, you can't just spray them. You have all very limited ways to get rid of them, and it's much harder work. So all those things got me started thinking about writing a mystery in which centers on the murder of two people, actually, a young man who's killed at a rave, which turns into a riot, and a very respected organic farmer out in the country. So the book takes place in the city of Bern, the medieval downtown, and out about 20 miles from the city, in the country, where in a village where several of the farmers are organic and several are not.
Amazing. So I mean, that's a wild, like, yeah, you're out in the country, and you know, even when you think about Switzerland, you just think pristine. So pesticide, when I first saw that, and I'm like, pesticide in Switzerland, that doesn't even That, to me, it's a big deal. But Nancy, I wanted to go to you because you've been reading Pesticide, and what is it for you that really captured your attention? Because you haven't put your Kindle down for a while. We have work to do. I'm just going to remind you.
Well, all righty then. This is my work. So there. I like especially the opening of the book, because it just the quirky idea of somebody being murdered by pesticide. It's novel. I mean, it is. Who else has ever, who's written a murder mystery where a farmer's dead by pesticide, you know? I think, and that's like your opening, and then it goes twist and turns and twists and turns from there. And I haven't finished the book, because then if I do, I'll tell. Because I will. But it really moves really fast, and I like that, because, I mean, it is a real page-turner. And I can't wait to figure out, I have my ideas, but I can't wait to find out who did what to whom and why. You know, because it's building, and it's building fast. But, you know, if I had finished the book, then I would tell all and everybody would get set. So it is a book that can read and not feel like it's an encyclopedia. You know, this is, and yet the idea of organic farming, is there drama between farmers? Like if you have a farm next and yours is organic and you're next to somebody who isn't, and they do crop dusting, are you thinking that pesticide doesn't end up on your farm? There's all sorts of avenues here, which is what makes it really interesting. That's what I like about it.
Well, thank you. That's very nice to hear.
Yeah,
and I hope you'll make it to the end.
Oh, I will.
Trust me.
I will, but if I don't finish a book before a radio show anymore, because I somehow tell.
She does. And she keeps telling me about everything in the story too. So I'm also trying to watch my mouth here. But it seems to me really cool that you do bring in the organic farming, because it's something also very timely. I mean, you know, one of the mysteries killing us off right now is like climate change is, you know, that is an impending threat. And so it kind of goes with that too, with, you know, looking at what is organic farming. In fact, we have a friend who is an organic farmer. She's just recently retired from it, actually. But what she went through to be an organic farmer, you know, is, I know she's going to read your book. I know Andrea is going to read it.
Send me an email if I've made any mistakes. But, of course, what's done in Switzerland and what's done in the U.S. are, of course, different. But
sure,
certainly don't eat both places. You can't spray everything with pesticide. That's for
no.
sure.
She did it. She went organic because of her workers. She wanted to protect her workers, her farm workers, and their families, and because she's also an environmentalist and wants to care for the land and, you know, people eating her food. She just really cares. And, I mean, she's a former teacher turned farmer, and it was a huge amount of work that she did, and she learned so much. But I love that you're doing this, and then it's set in Switzerland, because, you know, we don't always get novels set in Switzerland, and so to get into that space too is really exciting. Tell us a little bit about the city. Is it Bern?
Yeah.
Bern.
Well, of course, you're right both ways. I mean, if you say it in English, people say Bern, and that's perfectly correct. But because I live in the German-speaking part, and I've lived there for 34 years, and my husband is a Swiss who speaks Swiss German, I am pronouncing it as it would be pronounced by the Swiss, which is Bern. Or actually by a Swiss German, Bern, but we won't get into that. We have a complicated dialect of German that we speak, but that's another issue. Although at the beginning of the book, I do talk, if anyone wants to bother to read it, there are some guidelines on how to pronounce things the way a Swiss does, just because even though the book's in English, you've got all the streets and all of the plazas and all of the places that are in German. So it's helpful to know. I had a lot of fun writing a book about Bern. I have lived there, as I said, for 34 years. I'm a Swiss citizen as well as an American citizen. I'm a dual citizen, and I consider it just a one of the most beautiful cities. I'm from where I live. I'm literally a 10-minute walk from the river, the Aare, it's called, that encircles the city and actually creates the space that it's in, and from buildings that are a whole medieval downtown that where many buildings date back to the 1600s. And
wow.
And it's just beautiful. The cobblestone streets, you know, the archways, the very old buildings. And yet I'm in less than an hour by car or train, and there are a lot of trains in Switzerland, from the Alps. So,
wow, cool.
You know, that is actually, there's Alps on one side, which are very tall mountains, more sort of like the Rockies. And I'm less than an hour on the other side from the mountains that are more or less like the Appalachians, which are called the Jura Mountains. So this is a country of Switzerland with only 8.6 or 7 million people, the same number of people as New York City.
Wow.
And it's also a tiny place. It's very small.
Mm-hmm.
The city itself, I mean, the country itself. And then Bern only is a tiny city compared to many American cities. It's only 150,000 people. So I wanted to write about it and really let people in the U.S. Get to know Switzerland, get to know Bern, which is both a state, a canton, we would call it, and a city. And I hope, you know, Nancy will be able to say when she finishes, if I've accomplished that. But I wanted to share the beauty and the excitement and the complication. I think people think of Switzerland as a very, frankly, I think people think of Switzerland as banks and boredom and chocolate. But you're bored if you're not eating chocolate or making money. And, of course, it's a much more complicated place to that with crime and riots and very good things too, but there are just good things that happen, and certainly not boring, I can tell you that.
Well, where your characters are really live, they're real to me. I'm really enjoying it. Did you fashion your characters after people that you know?
It's always interesting, isn't it? It's complicated. I think that I do think that I have to work in a way not to make not just the main characters, but all the characters have too much of me in them. I mean, I'm sure there are writers that don't even think about that, but you do have to be careful that, you know, you don't end up saying the things that you think. Of course, you're not likely to do that with your evil villains, but still, you never know. I did not fashion these people after anyone, my two main characters at least, which are the older woman detective. I say older, she's only 47, or actually, yes, 46 or 47 when the book begins, and the younger detective, who's a man in his mid-30s. I fashioned them to be people that I would like. I think that's, I am as like many, but not all readers, I really like to have at least one or two characters that I care about when I'm reading. Mm. And so when I was writing for other people, and of course you write for yourself, I have to spend a lot of time with these people while I'm writing about them. So I wanted to create two people that not, first of all, that I really liked, and secondly, that I thought were quintessentially good people. That was important to me, you know, moral people who thought a lot about their decisions before they made them, which does not mean they don't make mistakes, of course, but they recognize their mistakes. I think that was important to me, too.
It's interesting, too, talking about your characters, because it seems that Renzo, is he Italian?
He is the son of parents who were born in Italy and came to Switzerland to work. This was very true, although now, you know, Italy isn't particularly poor. in the 50s and 60s and 70s, many Italians came to Switzerland because they could get very good jobs there. And so his parents came, and so he was born in Switzerland, but he's what is called a second, you know, he's in a sense, his parents are the first generation, but not born in Switzerland. He's a second generation. So he's a Swiss and an Italian.
Oh, wow.
Sorry,
okay.
That was a long answer to your question.
No, but it's
Italian,
interesting.
But he has a double perspective. So I like the fact that he sometimes is mostly Swiss and he speaks German with everyone, but he speaks fluent Italian, and sometimes in the book, the Swiss do something that he finds so Swiss that he just rolls his eyes to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And says, oh, my goodness. Because
he's like, why did they put holes
heart,
in the cheese? Why
yes.
is there holes in the cheese? No, I'm just
yes.
kidding. But and then Giuliana, is she Swiss? I mean, even the name, I'm like, is that more, I'm going to go more Italian-German? Giuliana?
Well, in fact, she has an Italian first name because her maternal grandmother, it turns out, you know, that comes out in the book, is Italian, but she's purely Swiss, and she's, you know, two or three generations, her family in Switzerland on one side and many more on the other. Yes, she is from Bern, and knows the city very well and grew up in it.
It's interesting, again, going back to thinking of a murder mystery in Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, how many people go, I'm Switzerland. In other words, I'm calm. I'm not going to, you know,
mm-hmm.
cause friction. And then you're doing this on a police drama.
Mm-hmm.
And here in this country, I'm sure you've seen the news. It's like it's dramafied. It's dramafied when
every
it
day.
To what's going on in the force. And, of course, there's always good and there's some bad. And
yes.
So it's a sad situation what's going on in this country, and politically with it too. It's mixed up. It's a hot mess. And the same thing even with our. It's a hot mess. Farming, what we're doing with pesticides is
mm-hmm.
getting better, and I think more people are growing their own food. And we're all into organic farming too, but we do have an issue with what's happening in the police force across this country, and we.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just this so. To think of Switzerland, you know, I think pristine Alps, pure chocolate, green pastures and meadows, you know, and it's just like this magic land. And yet there is,
same
you know,
problems.
There's problems in Switzerland. What the hell happened?
No. Our police, too. I mean, that's one of the issues that's dealt with in the book, and that is the issue of police brutality, and I start with it right at the beginning, so this isn't a spoiler, where the policewoman, the detective, Giuliana's husband, is a freelance journalist. They are actually, you know, years of good marriage, but this issue of are the police scary, you know, are we scared mm-hmm. of the police or not, is an issue that comes up as their
wow.
daughter is caught up in a riot. And
mm-hmm.
then she's only 15, and I'm not, again, you know, I'm not giving anything away that doesn't happen pretty quickly. But this is, you know, this is an issue in other countries, too, that how much control do you, you know, how much control do you give the police, and how much self-control do the police have? And I just wanted to say that one thing, I will brag a little bit about my adopted country, which is in the United States, on average, police, their basic training is 5 to maximum 8 months. Even at the FBI, this is true.
Wow.
Although, of course, they apprentice, whereas in Switzerland, it's 2 years. And
wow.
I do think that that's a simple thing. But, you know,
wow.
when people spend, and I'm not talking about the detectives, I'm saying when the average uniformed policeman or policewoman spends 2 years training to become a police officer before starting to work with a more experienced person and having, in a way, a kind of apprenticeship on the job, which all police do, I do think that is going to help with the whole issue of self-control and how you react to things appropriately. Even when you have 2 years, you can also, a riot is a scary thing. I think we can always see both sides, for example, of the problem.
You know, I found it interesting in a way. I felt like I went back and started again. I'm like, okay, just to make sure that I didn't read incorrectly. I kind of felt like Juliana, her personality, maybe most authors would have assigned to her husband, and her husband's personality would be assigned to her, especially when it comes to the daughter gets into trouble at a riot and how the both parents react. I felt like she reacted more like a husband would react, and he acted more like the mother would react.
Well, don't forget that he has raised the children, because there was no way their lives that she could be, you know, they have, they're a couple example to me of a couple that has tried to make it work successfully for a woman to have a job as in the police, because that's a job where you work all night, you work weekends sometimes, you work terrible hours. And he is a freelance journalist, so that he can mostly work from home. And so perhaps that's why. I also think because she is a policewoman, you know, she projects a kind of bravery onto her, or she considers her daughter, you know, to be a tough cookie in a good way and brave. And I think, again, the daddy, and this is to me made like a daddy, he sees his little girl out there in a dangerous situation. So you can see it either way. I think in some ways maybe he does respond like a mother because he's more worried. Because anyway, you can see it both ways.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. So I went back and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. And then I also thought that if a journalist, whether male or female, is married to a police officer, whether male or female,
it could cause some problems.
It could cause big problems, because how does somebody come home at night and talk to the husband and not give him leads for stories?
Yeah.
Because here she is in the police force and stuff is happening, and here he is like, I have to go write a new story. How does she not say, hey, this happened, you should go look at this? You know what I mean? There's a temptation in there. Yeah.
I think they have to have a lot of trust. I mean, now I'm talking about them like they're real people, but
they are. I'm cracking up listening to you both, because it's like this sounds like we're talking about family members.
I know.
I mean, it's because I keep thinking, well, what if he comes home and he asks a question and she's not supposed to answer, but then it's her husband? I mean,
go ahead.
This is why I don't read the entire book, but I've read enough because I will tell. I can't help it. I was going to ask it, Kim, when you are writing the book, do they talk to you? Like, or do you feel like they're sitting there? Like, do you feel like you're writing a movie? Because apparently Nancy's whipping through your book so fast. And it sounds like it's like a movie kind of situation. Do you feel like they're in the room with you when you're writing?
You know, I this is a good question for any author. I think that there are times when I'm writing when I'm just sadly slogging along. It's like any job where you have good days and bad days. I know what I want to say next, but it just isn't flowing, or it just doesn't, it may not be bad words. I mean, it may not be that I'm writing terrible stuff, but I just don't get into it. And then there are other times, it's not even like they're in the room with me. It's like my characters are completely in my head. And there's a way, nothing magic, you know, I'm not trying to be mystical here, but there is a way that they've taken over. So in a way, they're telling me the story. That's why in part you have to be careful your characters don't say things that you would say, but but they're in there and the thing is just flowing out. And I can miss deadlines. I can forget to go places because, you know, they're talking. I mean, yes, I guess you could say they're talking to me, but it's even more immediate. It's more like they're in my brain. But yeah. I think this is true for many writers, that sometimes it goes well and sometimes you just are searching for them to tell you the story, but it's not happening.
It's like you're living a different life with them. Like, you know what I mean? It's like a different arm of your life, you know,
yeah.
when you're writing. It's like a different bubble, you know that you get into.
You
and
have
do,
people
but,
in your head.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and you don't need to go to a shrink about it.
But I want to know,
Nancy, just like I was saying, she's whipping through the book and just keeps talking and talking about it. And I'm like, don't ruin it for me.
See, that's why I can't read the whole thing
you
before a show.
You've been writing beforehand, but this is your debut novel. And how did you do that? How did you make it so good so fast? Like, you know what I mean? How can, you know, it's like when you do a debut novel, it's like, okay, I'm going to write a book. And that's a huge, huge thing to do. Writing is a painful process. And even though you could be excited, you have the ideas, but to get it out and do it and then refine it and edit and then you have to go through that editing process, which really sucks, unless some people like it, I suppose, you know. But there's babies that get cut out, you know, things that you
Absolutely.
Want in there. The editor goes, no, that's coming out. And that sucks. But how do you go to do a debut novel and it be so good from what Nancy's telling me and from what I'm reading and all the different praise? I mean, obviously you're kicking butt with this, but like, it's not overnight. I know it can't be. Like, I'm going to feel bad about the rest of my life. You don't have to work that hard to get there.
Well,
you know,
you're making my ears burn with all this praise. So thanks for all of that. And let's just hope it's as good as you say to many people.
Well,
but
it seems like everyone's saying that. So, I mean, how did it come? Let me tell you,
this should make you feel better. First of all, I started writing in 2012.
Okay.
And I didn't start writing this book. The book that I started writing in 2012 is going to be the second book. I mean, it is coming out.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's the second book. So I wrote that book and it was much too. So, I mean, I made all the mistakes. I made lots of mistakes. It wasn't like it was a magic thing. I made it about almost, no, not quite twice the length of this one, but much longer than anybody would ever publish a mystery. Well, Elizabeth George writes very long mysteries, but she's already successful. You know, an unknown mystery writer can't write, a 500-page mystery. It's unheard of. So I had worked on that for 2 years, but then I really had to set it aside. And I mean, it got better, but I still didn't think, it still wasn't there. And then I started to write this one. And I worked on it, and I got lots of opinion on it. And I, as you say, I revised. I spoke to someone who is actually, helps to edit things professionally and got some advice from her. I worked on Pesticide. And then I put Pesticide aside and went back to the first one and got that, once with what I'd learned from Pesticide, the second book, nobody's read it except me, but that the second book is now fixed. And then, still not having a publisher, I wrote a third book, which was the easiest one to write, I have to say, because, I don't mean it was easy. It's never easy. Writing books isn't easy, but you learn with every book. So don't believe that it was all, just flowed out of the pen like magic, or actually the pen. Mm. I'm being metaphoric. I write on the computer like most people do. But anyway.
Do you write something and then maybe a couple hours later or even the next day, one of your characters say, I would never do that, or I would never say that.
Ooh.
And you have to think about it and go back and say, let me change that up.
Well, that's interesting, very interesting, but not quite that directly. What could happen is that I would be more likely to write another chapter two and feel as if what had happened, including what the person said, didn't fit anymore. So sometimes as you, it makes sense that as you keep writing, you think you know where you're going, but suddenly you find yourself going someplace else, and then something, you know, it could be something simple like we're going to do that Tuesday and they do it Wednesday, but it could be something much more complicated like, you know, that there's a whole conversation about some person that you decide, I'm not going to put that person in anymore. So you just, you are constantly going back. But if I were giving writers advice, though, I would actually say go back as little as possible at the beginning because you can just get bogged down and just try to get something out there. And then you go back and say, oh, no, this doesn't make sense anymore. But yes, you're always having to change your mind about what you think is going on.
Yeah, you know, because sometimes I feel that the characters start telling the author, I'm doing this.
I know what you mean. I mean, in a way, yes, that they, you know, you just decide that, I mean, again, are they telling you? Yes, in a way they are telling you, I don't want that to happen. I want something else to happen.
That's funny. That is funny.
But that's what I think your characters really do come alive, and your book is written, so your characters are very alive. Who would you pick actor-wise to play Renzo and Juliana?
Well, now the part of the problem is, you know, this is you're going to have to help me, Nancy, because you're reading the book. I, of course, you know, I have, as people will also learn very quickly, I had the great fun of making, and I did this totally on purpose for just the fun of creating an extremely handsome man. So Renzo is supposed to be spectacularly good looking. At one point I say he should be advertising underpants or perfume or something on a big billboard.
And his name is Renzo.
Renzo Donatelli.
Renzo.
Yeah, exactly. So
he's an Italian stallion.
Well, it's interesting. He doesn't have dark hair. He's from Northern Italy, so he's actually quite a, you know, older woman enjoying creating this young man. But I remember that when I was looking on, I did look at actors,
but of course,
this included old actors. I mean, I found a picture of a young Colin Farrell, and F-A-R-R-E-L-L. I don't know if that rings a bell. He's an Irishman.
Yes.
I mean, but Colin Farrell isn't very young anymore. I mean,
no, but listen.
But I found
like Colin,
and I thought, this is Renzo.
No, Colin is like, you know, he's done those movies where he comes out like a swinging a sword kind of thing, and like, okay, you know, those.
Too bad he can listen to the program. His ears could be burning, but
he can come over. Come on over. It's Champagne Sunday, Colin. We're ready.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because at least you're going to laugh at this. I just went to a young Dean Martin.
Oh, here we go.
Because you were thinking Italian, of course.
Yeah.
That's the problem with casting characters you really like, including Harry Potter, anybody. You cast them in a movie, and you've lost, as soon as you see the movie, your first thought is, that's totally wrong. And then after that, nothing else can come into your brain. You've lost your own picture.
But this is the point. You know, movies, we love movies and
of course,
shows
I
and
love
everything.
Movies too.
But when it comes to reading a book, what I love about a good book is that co-creative experience where your imagination,
exactly,
you are able to, like, when someone says, okay, you know, the dude has blonde hair, like, you automatically know what shade blonde hair you want and who, what, and where, and you can make your own dude, or you can go from a dude you like, you know what I mean? Like, seriously, like, you may have Colin, and I'll go, like, you know, I want Fabio. I really don't. I'm just kidding. But,
Well, I shouldn't even have mentioned
I want real butter, by the
young
way.
Colin Farrell, because I've already put something in your head. And I do think it's helpful when you say, you know, this person has, because I have to picture them too. So I do say, you know,
yeah.
Renzo has sort of hazel eyes and light brown hair.
Mm-hmm.
And he isn't big. He's very muscular. He's muscular, but he isn't one of these muscle-bound guys. And I do, you know, say that Juliana has dark hair and dark hair. She's actually the one that looks more quintessentially Italian, which, of course, many Swiss do. I mean, lots of Swiss have dark hair and dark eyes. So, and that's enough. I think that gives people enough to just, you know, go with it and see what they come up with in their heads.
Well, this has gotten a little spicy here. I'm kind of digging this. Well, it's a little bubbly on a Sunday. Who doesn't want to have a little, you know,
yeah,
Colin Farrell
right?
mindset, you know, like, you know, little male beauty here and there doesn't hurt at all. It sounds all good
here,
to me.
Here.
You know, but okay. So if you were going to have Juliana and Renzo over for dinner,
mm-hmm.
or take them out to dinner, go to dinner with them, where would you go? And what would, and you were, if you were cooking, I mean, would you cook or would you take them out? Like what would that evening be like if you took them out to dinner?
Oh, well, I honestly think it would be more fun to cook. I would be a little nervous, but, you know, I think I'd want to, you know, have them over to dinner. I mean, my poor husband, I love having him there, but I guess we're going to assume he stepped out while I have this dinner, although he likes them very much. He'd get along with them very well, I feel sure. He's the Swiss. I mean, I'm almost Swiss, but, you know, he would have a great time with them. But I think I would make them a big pot. Now, this will surprise you, a big pot of rabbit stew, because this is a Swiss dish or European dish that I really like. Lots of carrots, lots of white wine, lots of mustard. Saute the rabbit, pieces of rabbit, and then you fill up the pot with all kinds of good things, vegetables and mushrooms. And then I would really enjoy asking them about their families. You know, one of the things I've done is give each of them kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, of course, you know, I should ask them about their cases and all, but hey, I start with their kids because I really had fun giving them families.
Mm.
And I think, you know, policemen very rarely have, there are many exceptions, but many detectives, imagine Jack Reacher, Lee Child's Jack Reacher with a couple of kids. I mean, it just doesn't fit, right? And
mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to have detectives and police that
you humanize them. You know what I mean?
Yes,
I don't mean that
regular
wrong.
Families. And
they're
regular people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Regular jobs.
Yeah.
Not regular jobs. Yes.
Right, but like I think that's why I'm saying you're humanizing them, and I don't mean this wrong about police men or women. I mean that, you know, it's the same thing with our military. It's the people in the uniform, and they become almost like a robot in our eyes, like that's the people doing that over there. And we're forgetting about that human connection of family
what
happens on the front lines. What happens when they're late or in danger? And, mm-hmm. you know, the families feel all of that. I mean, imagine, you know, if you're a child and your dad or your mom is out there in the field, present danger every single day of their life, and you respect that, but there's a fear.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that fear becomes real. So I think it's so important to bring that humanity part in, and so we can also mm-hmm. understand a little bit more. Obviously, we do have some very bad police people in
mm-hmm.
the world, and they need help, and we need to stop hurting people over racism and anger and issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the problem is that distance. And if we were more connected to our police force and their families, maybe things wouldn't get so derailed at times.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, the greater populace had that human connection. And I think we've lost that human connection. It just is like, you're over there, we're over here. And I think that's a big deal. So I think what you're doing about bringing families in is an important thing.
I'm glad. I really wanted to do that because I think so often, I'm now not talking about reality, but even in books, you know, if the police person is an alcoholic or the police person has drug problems and these things happen, they happen to everybody. And I'm sure in a stressful job like a police But I mean, we could probably sit here, if we're big mystery readers, could probably sit and list detective acts, detective who has some sort of mental, I mean, in books, this is mental problems, alcohol problems, drug problems. It's, you know, some kind of really is alone, can't connect with anyone, and is isolated. And I thought, look, there are people like that out there in all field, in all professions, but I want to have some police people that are just struggling with having a very difficult job and trying to have a normal life.
Yeah.
Well, what they see on a day-to-day basis, it's not for sure what we see on a day-to-day basis, except for cast on the television, which is remote or removed compared to up close and personal in life. So,
yes.
You know, what we ask our first responders, be it firemen, policemen, what have you, to do for a little bit of money, it's incredible that it's like our military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forgetting to show respect for our military is criminal to me, because they put themselves in danger on a day-to-day basis.
Absolutely.
And we kind of take it for granted sometimes, you know, we have in this country just lately defund the police. And I'm like, what? Are you crazy?
We need to take care of the ones that are bad. That is really good. That situation is bad and wrong.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, we've been in cities where they did defund the police, and that's not working very well.
You don't defund, you fix.
Yeah, you fix. And I think that's again, doing these stories, it just brings in that human element and makes it real, even though it's a novel and fiction, it makes it real. So we appreciate what you've done, and I can't wait to read it. I'm going to have to wait a week until it clears my brain from Nancy telling me everything. And I know she's going to finish the book tonight, because it's Champagne Sunday. She's going to go sit out in the sunshine while it's there, because tomorrow we're going to get rain, and she's going to finish the book. So everyone, Pesticide is out now. It's by Kim Hayes, and you can go to her website, Kim Hayes Bern. So it's H-A-Y-S. So let me just say, Kim is K-I-M. See, I can spell. And then H-A-Y-S-B-E-R-N, KimHayesBern.com. And you can find her on Facebook and Twitter as well. And go get it at your favorite bookstore, too. You're on bookshop.org, right, where people can choose their bookstores?
Yeah.
Amazon, we love bookshop.org. We really love them.
Yes.
Because
I'm delighted. Of course, people may order it from Amazon, but I'm delighted if they go into their local bookshop and order it there. And who knows, maybe the bookshop will order two, and then somebody else will get one.
That's it. We love that. We love that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us, and please keep us posted on the next one. Please come back when you've got part two out. We're ready.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Lisa. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Too, and champagne toast to you. Thanks so much, Kim.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.